Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, Pope Benedict's message for Sunday's World Communications Day, available in user-friendly format on a brand new website, and charting new interfaith directions. Catholics and Muslims from Australia make a joint pilgrimage to Istanbul and Rome. Stay tuned. Sunday, May the 24th, marks the Church's World Communications Day, and for the occasion, Pope Benedict earlier this year issued a message entitled New Technologies, New Relationships, promoting a culture of dialogue, respect and friendship. The message is directed especially at the so-called digital generation and is presented in an easy-to-use way on a new website, www.pope2u.net, which we spoke about on this programme earlier in the week. The site, available in 5 languages, enables you to share postcards, videos and messages from the Pope through the use of Facebook, YouTube and iPhone applications, or learn more about the message in an accessible and user-friendly language.
We are at the service of the Holy Father, and we think that we must take advantage of what new technologies are offering us in this moment.
Archbishop Claudio Celi heads the Pontifical Council for Social Communications and is the driving force behind many of these innovations, directed especially at a younger generation of Catholics. Significantly, he told me, this year's message from the Pope is also notable for its positive and encouraging tone and contents.
It is true. I think that the main aspect, the main tone of this message is certainly a positive approach. The Holy Father realizes that new technologies are creating new relationships. And I quote, the Holy Father says that these technologies are truly a gift to humanity. And is addressing, and this is the peculiarity of this message. The Holy Father is addressing his message particularly to the so-called digital generation. He is addressing himself to young people who have grown up with these new technologies and are at home in a digital world that often seems quite foreign to those of us who as adults have had to learn, to understand and appreciate the opportunities it has to offer for communications. And you will realize that the last paragraph of this message is addressed to the Catholic young people. And the Holy Father is inviting the Catholic young generations to be messengers of their faith to the digital world. It's nice. He says, I would like to conclude this message by addressing myself in particular to young Catholic believers, to encourage them to bring the witness of their faith to the digital world.
So it's a message to young people. It's a very contemporary message about the latest technologies. And yet the Pope also looks back to this very basic instinct, the very earliest instinct of men and women to communicate with each other and to celebrate this connectivity.
Yes, it is nice because the Holy Father is giving us a theological interpretation. He says the desire for connectedness and the instinct for communication that are so obvious in contemporary culture are best understood as modern manifestations of the basic and enduring propensity of humans to reach beyond themselves and to seek communion with others. And at the light of the biblical message, the Holy Father is stressing that loving is in fact what we are designed for by our Creator. And not naturally, I'm not talking about fleeting, shallow relationships, I am talking about the real love that is at the very heart of Jesus' moral teaching. In this light, reflecting on the significance of the new technologies, it is important to focus not just on their undoubted capacity to foster contact between people, but on the quality of the content that is put into circulation using these means. And this is why the Holy Father is encouraging all people of goodwill who are active in the emerging environment of digital communication to commit themselves to promoting a culture of respect, dialogue, and friendship.
So in fact, the message is also recognizing there are risks, there are dangers. We think of pornography and criminal material on the net.
Yes, the Holy Father knows perfectly that through these means, people can transmit, they can present something that is against the dignity of the human being. The Holy Father says that if the new technologies are to serve the good of individuals and of society, all users will avoid the sharing of words and images that are degrading human beings, that promote hatred and intolerance, that the debates of goodness and intimacy of human sexuality, or that exploit the weak and vulnerable. So the Holy Father is conscious of some limits, but he considers, and this is why he's addressing mainly the young generation, that there is a positive aspect that must be underlined, must be stressed, and must be promoted.
Finally, your council itself is going to be using the latest digital technology, isn't it, to promote this message to as wide an audience as possible. You're kind of in the forefront here in the Vatican, aren't you?
I think that we are inviting the young generation to be like a tam-tam. Can it be used by this expression? It means that the young generations, they know how to situate themselves in this cultural and digital world. And we are inviting them to be really promoters, to present to their friends in the digital world the message of the Holy Father. We are inviting Catholic associations, young generations, groups, just to be really the promoters of the message of the Holy Father. And we think that we will find people who will do this generously and enthusiastically, because they will discover that the Holy Father is their side, is near, is using a vocabulary, he is using perceptions that are typical of the young generations. And such perceptions, these evaluations can be promoted, can be presented to the young people today.
Thanks there to Archbishop Claudio Celi, President of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. And once again, the website where you can find the Pope's message for World Communications Day, www.pope2u.net. Catholic-Muslim relations were one of the key themes of Pope Benedict's pilgrimage to the Holy Land earlier this year, and the dialogue between the two faiths is becoming an increasingly high priority for church leaders all over the world. One country where such interfaith dialogue has been developing successful models at both leadership and grassroots level is Australia, where Islam was introduced by traders from the Indonesian archipelago long before the arrival of Europeans on the continent. Today, Muslims in Australia number around 2% of the population from many different countries and ethnic backgrounds. Just recently, a delegation of Muslim leaders from the Melbourne area embarked on a joint pilgrimage to Europe with a group of Catholics led by the Auxiliary Bishop of Melbourne, Christopher Prowse. The aim of the trip was to increase the knowledge of each other's faith traditions, and the pilgrims travelled first to Turkey and then on to Rome, where they took part in a number of interfaith encounters and attended Pope Benedict's Wednesday general audience. They also found time to visit our studios, where Bishop Prowse sat down with Iqbal Patel, President of the Australian Federation of Islamic Councils, and Oran Cikek, Executive Director of Australia's Intercultural Society, to tell me more about their efforts to promote greater cooperation between the two faith communities in Australia.
My name is Bishop Christopher Prowse. I'm the Catholic Auxiliary Bishop of Melbourne, Australia.
I'm Iqbal Patel. I'm the President of the Australian Federation of Islamic Councils.
My name is Orhan Cicek. I'm the Executive Director of the Australian Intercultural Society.
Perhaps I could ask you first of all then, you've just been to the papal audience here up in the Vatican. Perhaps I could ask the two of you to describe your impressions for me. Was it the first time that you'd seen the Pope, for example?
It is the first time for me. I have been to the Vatican before, but the experience today was absolutely overwhelming. To see the Pope in person and to see the reverence and the feeling that is out there amongst the members of the community from all religions, but particularly from the Catholic Church from all parts of the world.
Pope Benedict, of course, was in Australia just fairly recently. I'm wondering, was there much interest in his visit at that point from the Muslim communities?
There is. When he came to Australia, Muslim delegations as well as the other interfaith leadership had the meeting with the Pope, and the awareness of interfaith understanding and relationship, it's really rise up to a certain level after his visits and the meeting with this leadership of the interfaith communities.
Certainly Australia seems to be something of a pioneer, perhaps, in interfaith dialogue. Bishop Christopher, perhaps you could tell us why you think this is.
Yes, well, we think it is because our big cities are very cosmopolitan, and with a huge migration, people from all around the world coming in, especially since the Second World War, people have been brought close together in the one street, the one neighbourhood. They might have like a little United Nations. So they shop together, they talk together, they're neighbours. And then, of course, the conversation often comes up to their religious affiliation. So there's a friendliness. Australians are always known as friendly people, and this really helps into religious dialogue.
What do you see then as the most difficult obstacles in this work that you're doing? Because I imagine there are some. However good the friendships may be, there must be tensions, there must be difficulties. What do you see perhaps as the most difficult obstacles?
Yeah, I think that is probably the most pressing question that's facing the world community now. I sincerely believe that if you can take politics out of faith, then I think we are all in this journey together, and the faith community are certainly moving in on this journey in the right direction, and we know which direction to take. But it's when you bring in the political constraints and the imperatives that people might have is when the difficulties arise and the roadblocks and the hurdles are either put in by the powers to be, or they come in by virtue of the other pressures.
It is difficult to separate these two issues, the politics from the religion. We've seen it again in Geneva just these past few days, the Durban Conference on Racism. How do you suggest ways of doing that, perhaps? How difficult is that, particularly from an Islamic perspective?
Sure. I think the Durban Conference is probably the saddest contemporary issue that is facing us all. It is, after all, an issue that talks about the basic tenets of human being, about racism, about the individuality of human beings. And, you know, you asked the question about the presence of Australia. I mean, if you look at the Vatican, or if you go to the Holy Land in Mecca, then that is a place where you can see people from all over the world, of the one faith, but people of different ethnicity and different racial backgrounds, all mingling, and the one brotherhood comes out. Now, this Durban Conference was supposed to articulate that same theme forward. And it is very, very sad that the great powers of the world, Australia included, decided not to participate in that very August conference. And I must here pay my tribute to the Vatican and to the Catholic leadership of the world that they have taken a very strong stand in articulating that this is something that should go beyond politics, answering your question, really. How do you do it? I think a lot of the greater countries have separated religion and politics. The state and religion are supposed to be separate. Now, let's be really clear and be honest about that, that we really want to separate the two. And if we let the faith community try and provide guidance, provide some assurances along the way that we are doing what we are supposed to do to get the various faith communities together, I think the politicians should lead and also maybe lead by example with openness, with sincerity, and not mix their political agenda with the leaning towards faith.
But within the Islamic world, though, there are many who don't agree with your perspective on separating faith and politics. It's one and the same thing. How do you tackle that?
Islam, I think, in terms of the various religions, Islam, we tend to say that Islam is not just a religion, but the governance aspects of the religion and the state also comes in there. And that is where we have that difficulty and also maybe the challenges that we have. But we see a lot of the difficulties and the roadblocks in this great work that is going on, being placed by some of the greatest powers in the world right now. America, for instance, consistently refuses to participate in some of these great events. Then I think some of those greater countries need to bring out that leadership and separate religion. Now, where Islam comes in, I don't believe that governance at the political level and the religious side of things has been really a roadblock in some of this work that has been going on.
What we have found, though, there is the 21st century, the greatest the problem is the human failure, the failure of the old faiths, failure of the humanity. That's the human failure. It starts with the lack of education, ignorance, and also that we are carrying lots of baggages, whether it be ideological baggages or whether it be stereotypes, and we're carrying this lots of, you know, the different baggages today's world. And also one thing we never forget, that the old faith communities, we are carrying the scars on our faces. We cannot condemn each other because of certain reasons. When we look at the behind, we see the lots of, you know, the embarrassment situations for each faith. It's about time to come up to, you know, the new chapter. We have to leave the polemics and the argument points behind. Now we live in the global age of the internet and the fast communications level, and the peoples and individuals, different faiths, they're receiving the tens and thousands of, you know, the different channels of new informations. So those baggages, it really make the people the confused, and also the increase the level of the conflicts and the fear. So only we can, you know, reduce those the fear and the conflicts, we need to provide the proper informations, and also the particularly is important for the faith community. They need to be getting to, you know, touch each other, and also socially interact each other, get to know it better in personal level than the doctrines and dogma.
Australia, like many of our European countries, is increasingly secular. People are increasingly listening less and less, perhaps, to the faith communities. That's a huge challenge, surely.
We believe that, you know, the particularly in Europe is difficult because the number of the cultures, including, you know, the Turkey and beyond, is the Islamic culture. The many centuries they fought each other. They got this lots of, you know, the challenges, and also the, you know, the very deep stereotype between each other. Whereas in Australia, we are isolated island, and down under, we don't have that kind of, you know, the challenges. We don't have the hostility surrounding us.
Bishop Christopher, would you say it's a priority perhaps today for the church there then, the whole question of interfaith relations?
I think so, for the fact of peacemaking, if nothing else. If there's going to be peace in the world, there must be peace within religions. And we are finding in our pilgrimage, which is quite an unusual pilgrimage and quite unique, we've been to Istanbul as guests of our Turkish Muslims, and we just arrived a few days ago here in Rome, and we're having a wonderful time. Went to the audience this morning with the Pope, and we went to the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue and spoke to some of the officials there yesterday, and we're showing each other's faith, so that There's not a hint of syncretism or relativism. We are proudly who we are. In fact, I must say, through my friendship with my Muslim friends, I've become even stronger as a Catholic. We don't in any shape or form impose ourselves, but we always propose our religion. And although we have enormous differences theologically on that vertical level, we have a tremendous commonality on the horizontal level, the ethical level, the importance of family life, the importance of human life, the human dignity. There's a lot of overlapping on that level. And for that reason, I think interreligious dialogue, which perhaps in the past might have been seen as something quaint, something on the periphery, does seem to be coming towards a more central focus, considering the terrorism of our age and the abuses of true religion and people using religious language to hit, to maim, and to wound people. Religion, true religion, is the opposite. It builds up, it's compassionate, and for us Christians, it leads to Jesus Christ as Lord and Saviour.
This question of Catholic identity versus the dialogue, the interfaith relations, is at the heart of the question, isn't it?
Yes. Well, I note with great interest that on the travels of Pope Benedict, he would make a real priority, as indeed Pope John Paul II did too, to have an encounter of friendship with the religious leaders of the place that he's visiting. And this sends out a message to the world that this is something important when the Pope himself, and the message goes out to different religions, that the head of the Catholic Church sees this as a priority. And it's a discussion, a dialogue that's based on love and truth. And friendship is very important here, so that we can build up trust with each other and share with each other without in any shape or form making some sort of big soup where we all sort of have some super religion. That's poison to interreligious dialogue. And we must respect each other's difference. At the same time, because we share this planet, we have a great responsibility to work for peace together as best we can in the midst of our theological differences.
You mentioned, of course, the very difficult issues of terrorism and political manipulation and so on. How easy is it, though, to move from the agreements of the things which unite us to these very difficult issues which divide us?
Well, I always like to think that that old expression, think globally, act locally. And if we think globally alone, it's overwhelming, and we might as well go home and sort of go into our little ghettos and stay there. But we're not ghetto people. True religion is not a sect. It's not a movement away from engagement. True religion is actually engaged, wants to humanize society. And therefore, at least on the local level, we would hope that our pilgrimage as brothers and sisters, there's about 22 of us, 11 Catholics, 11 Muslims from Australia, particularly from the southeastern part of Australia, Victoria, Melbourne. We would hope we would send out a little message. It might be just a little pebble in a big lake, but at least locally people know that what is what we're doing. They're saying, well, these Catholics and Muslims are trying to get on with each other. My Muslim friends are so close to me, and it's been reassured and reaffirmed over these days.
The difficulty, though, is moving from like-minded people to those on the extremist wings, whether within the Islamic or the Christian communities. How do you do that? How do you move beyond the group of people who are already interested in this kind of peaceful interfaith dialogue?
From global to local, that's an interesting concept. And you earlier talked about the mix of politics and religion. Some of the initiatives that can happen from different churches, and let's talk about the Vatican's global initiative. The first one goes back to Pope John Paul II, where he talked about the invasion of Iraq in 2003, where he took a very strong stand. Let's come back more recently to the atrocities that happened in Gaza, where Cardinal Milano very strongly came out in very, very strong words, and it reverberated around the world that this was something that in this modern world should not happen. More recently, with this Durban conference, again, the Vatican has come out with a very strong stand. Now, the leaders of the world have a large Catholic population amongst embedded within those populations. They have to take notice of this. And these are strong words. Similarly, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, where the holy Islamic sites are, have also engaged with the Catholic Church more recently. They've had a dialogue. I happen to be a participant to the Mecca conference, and subsequently there has been a lot of good work that has happened. Now, that is also influencing at the global level. At the local level, again, it is initiatives that we can take in our own environment, whether it's in Sydney, in Melbourne, in London, in Istanbul, in Tokyo or Rome. Let's go back to the World Youth Day, for instance. It was something that we as Muslims suggested to the organizers of the World Youth Day, that we would like to host some pilgrims to us at our Islamic schools. And we were very happy, honored that that was accepted. And we as Muslims were able to show some of our own hospitality towards the youth. Similarly, we organized some interfaith sports during that time. And that went down very well. Okay, it might have only reached 10 or 15,000 people, the individuals, their families, their extended families, grandmas and granddads, etc. But I think the positives, if the media do pick, and that's our challenge as well, to engage with the media, that people can see that at the local level, there are initiatives that are happening that is trying to tell the youth. I mean, that is the people, that's the generation we have to really engage with. We as leaders of the faith, or the politicians, generally are people who are 40, 50 years and above. We really need to go to the grassroots. And the challenge for us is to try and take some of these thoughts to the schools. The Catholic Church are very, very strong in education in Australia. We, the Muslim community, have also now a large number of emerging schools. In Australia, we are very lucky that we can have Islamic schools or faith schools, any faith schools, and they are equally funded by the government. So there is a way where we have twinning arrangements between schools, and they can exchange ideas, they can have interfaith sports, mixed sports, quizzes, debates, visit to each other's schools, other sporting functions. And I think that is the way at the grassroots level that we can try and take this to the next step. Besides, of course, the traditional open mosques, open churches, Ramadan fasts, visit to each other's homes, etc.
The challenge, as you say, is to make these positive developments known over and above what the media seem to delight in, the difficulties, the Regensburgs. How do you do that? What else can you do as a Catholic Church leader to try and put the focus on the positive rather than the difficulties, the controversies, the negative aspects?
Well, I think there's the matter of informing people exactly, you know, the background. You just get one or two lines in a newspaper and, you know, everything sort of breaks out negative, negative. But one of the roles of the Catholic leader, and particularly the Catholic bishop, is to offer the background and to see, you know, the background of that statement and why would it have been said, and to as an opportunity, really, of informing the media and through that the people. It's interesting with Regensburg, you know, there was a lot of obviously negativity around the world for the first couple of weeks, but it's interesting the time's passed, it has brought out all this wonderful dialogue with the Common Word document and meetings here in the Vatican with Muslim leaders like never before. So the old Portuguese expression, God writes straight with crooked lines, is a good one here, and moving from a negative to a positive is the challenge of our time.
Thanks there to Iqbal Patel, President of the Australian Federation of Islamic Councils, to Oran Cikek, Executive Director of Australia's Intercultural Society, and Auxiliary Bishop Christopher Prowse of Melbourne. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English programme for today. Join us again at the same time tomorrow if you can. If not, don't forget you can find all our news and feature programmes on the internet. Look us up at www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudetur Jesus Christus.